Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Pavone Group and Vigor, a branding and marketing agency for restaurant, beverage, and hospitality brands. Learn more at vigorbranding.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hi, I'm really excited about today's guest, mainly because I love a good origin story. Our guest today is Craig Bernstein. He's the founder of Doc B's Fresh Kitchen Restaurants. Craig, I really appreciate you joining us today. You and I met a couple months ago out in LA, and I got to talking to you, and I just love a good story. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Michael. And it was great to meet you and share with you my story and tell you more about it today.
Sounds great. So, when I first heard you talk about Doc B's, I was fascinated by it for two reasons. First of all, as I said, I'm a marketer, right? So I love a good story. Original stories are what brands are made of. So we have Doc B's, and also, Doc B was your father, and my dad was my best friend. So the whole thing just kind of fit together for me, and I was really, really excited for you to be on here today. So can you tell me a little bit about the whole thing, about your dad and how this whole thing about the Doc B's got started?
Whew. I have to go way back. My father was a doctor. Like you mentioned, my last name is Bernstein. So Doc B is ultimately where the name for the business came from. But I grew up in New York, Long Island. And my father and I, we used to go to the New York Knicks games. And we had a great, great experiences going to Madison Square Garden and rooting on the Knicks in the 90s, Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley, John Starks. Still remember it like it was yesterday. Awesome. And so if I go into the story about how Doc B's and the restaurant started, I can go into that detail if that's what you'd like.
Yeah, I'd love, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's kind of a cool story. So I'm 10 years old. I'm a middle child. I have a younger sister, Sarah. She's 5, an older brother, Jonathan. At the time, he was 12. And I remember, like it was yesterday, my dad calls the house. We all ran to the phone. At that time, you actually wanted to answer the phone. Now when the phone rings, nobody wants to answer it. And we picked up the phone, and my dad says, I have 2 Knick tickets for tonight's game, and says to my mom, who can come? And we all raised our hand, I want to go. And my mom said, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to cut straws into a hat. And whoever gets the smallest straw gets to go to the game. So I can't imagine my sister, by the way, at 5, was going to be allowed to go to the Knicks game that late at night. But she was included because she always got anything she wanted. And so we all picked straws. And I ended up picking the smallest straw. And I won to go to the game with my dad. I was happy. I got to go upstairs and change, I remember. Long story short, it's raining. He drives home from work, picks me up. We drive into Manhattan, which was always I still remember it so vividly. And we get to the Garden, and I'm thinking we have these great seats and we're going to have a great time. And we're walking up, and we don't stop. Up and up and up. We have the highest seats in the whole Garden. And, I was 10 years old. It didn't matter where we were sitting, but I wasn't expected to be in the nosebleed section. And so we have a great time. I remember at that time, there was a restaurant called Ranch One, and that was like a chicken finger place. And that's all I ever wanted was Ranch One chicken fingers. And they gave you French fries, and they served it in a big cup overflowing with fries. So I got my Ranch One. And during halftime, my dad points down to Celebrity Row, which at that time still is a big deal, but it was a big deal. Spike Lee and Bill Murray. And he points down to Celebrity where he says, Craig, do you see that guy down there? And I said, Dad, we're so high. I can't see anything. He says, the guy who's sitting at the court, that's my friend. And I said to him, well, if he's sitting on the courts, I want to go meet him. And he says, I don't know if we'll make it down in time, but let's try. So we hurry downstairs. We try to get to the court before the buzzer, you know, goes off and halftime's over. And we're blocked by the velvet rope to get through to the very bottom of the court. And my dad's yelling. And he's saying, Alan, Alan. This guy, Alan, turns around and waves to my dad and ultimately tells the usher, he's safe. You can let him in. And so I go down and I'm standing on the court of Madison Square Garden. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. This is incredible. The ball comes to me. I catch the ball. And I'm just, you know, I'm just in like awe. So the, you know, halftime ends. I shake this gentleman Alan's hand. I say, thank you so much. And we walk all the way back up to our top row seats. You want me to keep going? I mean, there's a
lot. Oh, yeah. It's awesome. It's great.
And so we finish the game. We have the best time. And the next day, Alan calls my dad. And he says, Rob, he says, you never told me that Craig was such a precocious, young, you know, great kid. And my dad said, well, I didn't know. It never came up. I forgot to tell you. And so he says, I want to give you tickets to the game to take the family. And, you know, you guys could have our seats. Couple weeks go by. We get the tickets. Now, keep in mind, there's five people to our family, three kids and mom and dad. And mm-hmm. Alan, from what I was told, was the only guy who had four tickets on Celebrity Row. Everybody else had two. And now this is back in the day. So we go to a restaurant, we eat dinner, and then we go to Madison Square Garden. Now, remember, we have four seats. My dad puts my little sister on his shoulders and says, Sarah, pretend like, you know, they can't see you, and somehow gets us in. And five of us sat on four seats on Celebrity Row. It's unbelievable. It was like, yeah. Those things don't happen anymore.
No.
And so we have an amazing time and the high-fiving the players. It was memorable. Okay. Fast forward. I'm in the sixth grade, the same year that this happened. Mm-hmm. And I have to do a career report. What do you want to be when you grow up? And so I go home and, you know, one of the things that we were so passionate about as a family is we always had dinner together as a family. Came around food. Maybe that comes full circle. Mm-hmm. And I say to my dad, I said, Dad, Miss Collins gave us a report. What do you want to be when you grow up? He says, oh, do you want to be a doctor like me? I said, no. I said, I want to be like the guy who has the tickets at the Knick game. What does that guy do?
I want to make money.
I want to make money. Yeah. And so he says, well, remember that restaurant that we went to before the game? I said, yeah. He said, well, he owns that restaurant. I said, all right, fine. When I grow up, my career report's going to be restaurant owner. And I did the career report and I was 10 and I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing, but here we are today.
That's awesome. And of course, the report was about Alan Bernstein, no relation to you.
No relation.
He happens to have the same last name, and he is the founder of Morton's. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I don't know. So he wasn't the founder. You know, I think Arnie Morton and the Morton family founded it, but he ultimately became the, you know, chairman, CEO of the business.
Yeah, he ran it.
Around store six or seven. And, you know, grew it into, you know, I think the household name that everybody knows today.
So you wrote this report that you wanted to be this restaurateur. And we actually had a copy of that report. And in a little bit, I'm going to ask you some of the questions that you asked Alan in your report and see if you feel that those questions still hold water today, if you would answer them differently.
Yeah.
Okay. So the relationship with Alan continues after that meeting. He was like a mentor to you through your college years. Is that correct? You want to talk a little bit about that and that relationship?
Yeah. I mean, the whole way. I mean, he really, he really transformed my life to a certain extent. I mean, you know, I went to Emory University in Atlanta and I studied, you know, business and entrepreneurship, and I got into some little groups of just, you know, the entrepreneurial idea. When I was in college, I worked on a business plan to open a restaurant in Emory Village. And the concept was called Bernie's New York Deli. And, you know, I would float this idea by Alan and other people, but I was always pitching, you know? I mean, I always was like, who wants in? And as a 20-year-old kid, nobody really wanted in. I mean, a little bites here and there, but nothing like we were ultimately able to secure in the future. And so, you know, Alan really changed my life. Ultimately I went on to work for Houston's Hillstone Restaurant Group. And, you know, Alan really drove me to go pursue that. He didn't have any, you know, relations or introductions to make, but he did say that, you know, it's such a highly regarded, best in class restaurant company. And if I could get my foot in the door there, that would really be an incredible foundation to becoming a restaurant manager. And ultimately, I followed his advice. And through that advice, I got into that company. And another quick story, after I was with Houston's, I remember Alan called me and he said, "We're opening up a Five Guys Burgers." Alan became a big franchisor of a franchisee of Five Guys. Mm-hmm. And he said, "You have to come." I said, "Alan, I'm working. I can't." He said, "You have to come. You have to come." So I drove to this opening of a Five Guys in Queens, New York. And I go, and I was there for maybe like 30 minutes. And I said, "I have to go." He said, "Just sit down, shut up. I have somebody coming you need to meet." I said, "All right, fine." And so I waited. All of a sudden, David Overton, the chairman, founder of Cheesecake mm-hmm. Factory, comes in. And I had lunch with Alan Bernstein, David Overton, Mrs. Overton, and we're eating burgers, fries, and hot dogs at the opening of Five Guys Burgers in Queens. And I mean, these stories, when I share them, they just give me chills. I mean, nothing came of it except just to hear these industry titans talk about the restaurant business. And these are memories that I'll never forget.
That's fantastic. You know, I get to, in this podcast, I get to talk to a lot of founders, a lot of entrepreneurs, which of course you're one. And they always have unique stories. And they're always like, what's intriguing to me is a lot of times they're not just, things weren't just handed to you or to them or to any of us. There was a lot of hustle involved, right? A lot of struggle, a lot of grit. And I love that about the industry and about the entrepreneur side of this. I just think it's super cool. I know, Alan taught you a lot about hospitality. And the importance of hospitality in a restaurant, in today's era of quick service, is hospitality a dying art?
Well, listen, we transformed our business from, a more fast casual, although it was an elevated fast casual experience, into a full service, dining atmosphere and, everything from, hostesses up front to full service at the tables to more expansive bars, elevated management teams, team members in the kitchen who could execute a little bit of a higher quality food offering. And so I think for me and for us, the idea of hospitality and really going above and beyond for every guest experience was always really innate into the philosophy of the mm-hmm. business. And so I think that for us, we were always a little bit more on the elevated side. And that's why we transferred to the full service. I mean, we were able to make greater connections, be at the tables longer, walk guests to tables, and really kind of see the thing from the start to the middle to the end with this above and beyond gesture of hospitality. And I think that's really what was like ingrained in me. I mean, anytime I would ever go to Morton's with Alan, it was every dessert on the table, every appetizer on the table. Mm-hmm. And even after you had every dessert, he was like, "You got to try this other one that's not yet on the menu and you got to taste it. But Alan, I'm full. You could take one more bite." And that's really, how we run the business. I'll tell you one quick story about hospitality. I started the first restaurant in Chicago in the Gold mm-hmm. Coast neighborhood about 10 and a half years ago. And I was in the restaurant every single day, morning to night. And I got to really create amazing relationships with so many spectacular guests. As the business has expanded, I can't be in every restaurant every day. But those connections are everlasting. So one day, I think it might've been during COVID. So, 2020, I'm sitting outside and a guest walks in to place an order and she recognizes me. And she says, "Oh my goodness, I haven't seen you in so long. And I'm so proud of you. And we were your first guest in this whole thing. And she sort of started to tear up. And I said, what's the matter? And she said, you know, my husband has since passed away. And we used to always come here every Friday night. And we would always come here and we would get pizza. And we used to serve pizza. And you no longer have pizza. And I said, oh, my goodness. I said, you know what I'm going to do for you tonight? We're going to make you a pizza. And I was sitting there with my chef and we found, you know, dough. We made her pizza. And so it's like, you know, those types of connections and relationships. I mean, that's really why we got into this business in the first place. And to make somebody so happy from pizza dough and marinara and fresh mozzarella, I mean, you can't do that in any other walk of life. So to be able to have those types of connections and that type of special relationship, you know, I would trade this for nothing.
Yeah. I mean, food is love, and it's a great way to connect with people. And, you know, a lot of people's best memories revolve around food. You were saying earlier about your family always ate dinner together. I mean, it's sort of a lost art unto itself, but it's a wonderful part of life. And it's something that, you know, we all cherish, and it really does evoke a lot of great memories. That's for sure.
Yeah. Big time.
So when you started, now you have this full service restaurant, you really weren't planning on that, right? At first, it was more of a digital menu, right? Fast casual kind of concept.
Yeah. So, you know, I worked for Houston's, and I grew up to become a general manager with them. And during my tenure, you know, you started to see, and this was in the sort of 2007, 2008, 2009, and you started to see people come in and place orders at the bar, cheeseburgers, chicken salads, ribs, and get the food delivered on a plate and then ask for a box and take it to go with them. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we weren't doing, at least at that company, delivery, pickup, to go. It didn't exist. And so as an entrepreneur, I mean, you know, in 19 and 20 years old, I was trying to build a restaurant called Bernie's Deli. I was always thinking about, you know, what could be the first concept that we try to create. And so the idea was, how do you take casual dining and turn it into an order at the counter service experience, sort of think a Panera Bread, but on steroids. Mm-hmm. So digital menu boards, and we had GPS table trackers. And I think the one saving grace that we implemented is we had a full liquor, wine, beer program at the restaurant, and we had a bar component where you could get full service at the bar, or you can go order at the counter, sit down at the table, and then the service team would sort of take care of everything else, drink refills, catch up, run your food, bus your tables, things like that. And what we noticed is guests would walk in and they would say, hey, you see that menu over there at the bar? Go bring me that menu and, you know, come take my order at the table. And I'm being a little facetious the way that they spoke.
Sure.
But not so far off.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you know, it was through having this hybrid model right from the get-go. We trained the service team to have elevated service points. We had a full liquor program. We had full service at the bar. So we weren't just one or nothing. We sort of had all these little things going. So long story short, we started to take orders at the table. We started to notice that more people preferred, at least in our restaurant, that model. And what I thought was this amazing entrepreneurial, innovative idea: take casual restaurant food and serve it in a to-go order at the counter environment. We soon realized that, you know, most people, again, for us in the Gold Coast neighborhood of Chicago, wanted to sit down, be taken care of, but also have a casual go-to spot where they could dine with us multiple times a week.
Well, I mean, that's smart. I mean, and customers, they vote with their mouths, right? You got to follow them and what their needs are and their wants are, and you have to evolve and roll with the punches and change your model if you need be. That's very, very smart. Now, I'm going to jump on a side here. It's kind of funny because one of the things I read about you, you know, I'm sitting here saying you have to like listen to the customers and listen to what their needs are, but your menu is based on your favorite things, isn't it?
Very true. But I just think that I'm just like a regular guy, you know? And like, sometimes I'm in the mood for fried chicken.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm in the mood for a salad. Sometimes I'm in the mood for a fried chicken sandwich. So I think, you know, the menu is really built around something for everyone, any day of the week, whatever they're in the mood for. And, you know, so far, I think my taste buds align with most people. You know, we're operating now in five states.
That's
and
awesome.
So I think it's resonating.
How many locations total?
Yeah, so we have 10 restaurants.
Okay.
And it's an exciting time. You know, it's sort of like slow and steady growth, you know, not just growing for growth's sake, but really trying to get great real estate, grow organically, grow from within, build the team from within. I mean, we have people on our team from day one. And I mean, when you look back and you see an opening line cook from our kitchen now running the kitchen of our first restaurant.
That's awesome.
I mean, that's like, you can't beat that.
Yeah, you got to feel good about that.
Oh, amazing.
So one of the things I think is really interesting is, you know, we talk about these, you know, the Doc B's or any kind of a restaurant. And the main thing about a restaurant, I know it's not a franchise, they're all owned by you, but they typically want to resemble the same look and feel. So you have that consistent brand. Your decor and atmosphere for each location is a bit different. Can you talk about that and the thinking behind that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it certainly makes my architect, you know, happy to build. But no, you know, I think what it is, you know, we're constantly trying to innovate and think outside the box. And, you know, we're traveling, looking at what other restaurants and other people in the hospitality, whether it's hotels, whether it's fast casual, whether it's full service, you know, it's all these different visual cues that, you know, we're constantly looking to incorporate into how we can make our restaurants better. Mm-hmm. So I think the architecture and the atmospheres and the layouts are generated more around, we don't have a cookie cutter box. So each restaurant, some are 4,000 square feet, some are 6,000 square feet, some are in lifestyle centers, some are in general malls, some are in urban downtown markets. And so the atmosphere sort of forces us to have to look at each build out just a little bit different. Some have patios that then how do you incorporate that into the dining room? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's we still haven't figured out exactly who we are. You know, what I sort of say all the time is, you know, and I say this somewhat facetiously, I know the last chapter of our book. I just don't know all the pages between today and then.
Yeah.
And so we're still telling our story. We're writing our story. We're constantly looking and saying, what can we do better? How do we make our kitchens a little bit bigger without sacrificing dining space? Mm-hmm. So again, a little long-winded, but the architecture is more predicated on constantly trying to be better operationally. And then that turns into aesthetically, you know, something different for each and every store. Mm-hmm.
And the menu's a little different depending on the location too, correct?
Yeah, but that goes back to also, you know, like we have this menu item in Indianapolis, which is our most recent restaurant. It's called Killer Grill Trip. It's amazing. It's awesome. It has nothing to do with Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sometimes people will say, well, you know, the menu caters to the local clientele. Yes and no. I think all of our food caters to the local clientele. It's straightforward, you know, casual American themed restaurant. But I think, again, it's more about this innovation, putting our chefs to work, constantly exploring new taste buds and trying also, as we've gotten bigger, to overlap use of product so that we're not bringing in just one item for one menu, but really trying to see if we can expand upon it. So the menu is also about constant curation of tasting, trying, and ultimately it makes it onto new menus.
Mm-hmm. And as long as you like it, because I think you said in one of your articles, you could eat there 14 days in a row or something like that.
Yeah, there's 14 day parts in a week.
Okay. Yep.
And you could test me, but I've been there, I've done it, and I still haven't gotten sick of it.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Yeah, but you should watch us in a tasting. A tasting is fun to watch because, you know, what tastes right to one person,
oh, yeah,
it tastes off to another. And it's just so funny how you get into all the intricacies and just try to make the best product possible.
That's awesome. What do you think is the best or the best, the biggest challenge facing restaurants these days? What are you seeing as the biggest challenge?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the costs are certainly, you know, continue to rise. And I think our business, it's certainly a for-profit business. Don't get me wrong. But because we have a long horizon on how we look at the company as a whole, I think we could be a little bit more patient. But, you know, the costs continue to go up. And, you know, we don't just take price just because everybody else is. Mm-hmm. And so to keep up with those rising costs, the wages, construction costs, the day parts of delivery versus dine in, work from home versus coming to the office, all of those I think are real challenges. I mean, when you look at the business as a whole, you're just constantly competing with your next door neighbor. And we don't want to cut costs just to get more bodies inside of the restaurant. We really want to maintain our integrity. We want to maintain our value on the plate. We don't want to trim down on the quality or the specs that we offer. And so I think what we're blessed with is this long horizon, but the costs right now are definitely the most challenging part of our business.
Yeah. I mean, that makes an awful lot of sense. Sorry, let's have some fun. So back to your sixth grade, you meet Alan Bernstein and you write a report. Okay. And it's for school. You interviewed Alan in the report and you asked him really, I'll say some really incredible questions. I'll say for a 12-year-old, it was good. In fact,
I must have gotten help from my mom.
Okay. That's a good mom right there. Yeah. And I would say they're actually better questions than I'm asking you. So, I mean, you got lots of credit for that, or your mom does, I should say. So I'm going to ask you the same questions and I want to see, I mean, let's see if you answer them the same way that Alan answered them in his answers in the report. So the modern day you, let's go. When you hire a manager and people to work for you, what do you look for?
Yeah, number one is genuine friendliness. I mean, one of the pillars of our company is genuine hospitality. And I think the way somebody presents themselves and the truthfulness in the way that they engage, it really tells everything. We can teach you how to run one of our restaurants. We can put you through our 16-week training program and teach you all the different intricacies from the kitchen to the front of house. But genuine friendliness is something that can't be taught.
That's awesome. Alan's answer was very, very similar. And I think it's dead on, because I would do this all day long, up and down. I look for attitude. This is what he said, and the ability to communicate. And I think that's such a huge thing. I taught my kids. I mean, my daughters, the one thing I got instilled in them being very young, I said, look, you got to look people in the eye. You've got to talk to them. Don't be afraid. Tell them what you think. Just be sincere. And communication skills are huge. All right. Next question. At what point did you know to expand? Now, you asked this of Alan, and I'll see what your answer.
Yeah, you know, the business model always was to have more than one. So store two, for example, in Chicago, we signed that lease before store one opened. Wow. And that was probably the most dangerous part of the whole business, because store one, if I could tell you the war stories that we had there, it'd be unbelievable. So I think we knew to expand once we got store one and two under our footing. And we felt like the team was able to grow from within, and we were able to start promoting hourly employees to managers, managers to general managers to new store openers. And so I think the growth from within, from a people standpoint, I think put us in a confident position to start growing the business.
Very good. His answer was because I had a plan for how many to build. So sometimes that can be revisionist history, right? Like, you know, he's just giving you like these one word, like these little short sentence answers.
It sounded pretty. Keep in mind, he's talking about a 10-year-old.
That's true. But I think he's trying to impress you by the way he's throwing these answers down.
Yeah. So, how do you maintain 60 stores at the time by then?
How do you maintain the quality of all your restaurants?
Yeah, I'll show you my American Airlines travel app. we're traveling. We're in the restaurants. We're engaging with the team. We're engaging with guests. We're doing constant evaluations on food and service. But I think that's a little bit, it sort of comes from, really trying to give the general managers ownership of their restaurants. And so even if we're in one restaurant a day, we're still not in eight other restaurants and if we're in one store. And so I think it really comes down to letting the general managers, own their business, operate it like it was their four walls. And, we do a lot of follow-ups. We try to give them the tools to be successful. But ultimately, I think the business is as successful as the people who run them. And that's really where we spend a lot of time and emphasis on trying to grow.
Yeah, that's excellent. All right. So how challenging is your job?
Well, I think what's fun about my job is you can have a day that is the easiest day in the world and everything is just moving right along and nothing comes up. And then you can have another day where it seems like nothing's going right. And so I think the job is going to always ebb and flow. It's going to always have peaks and valleys. I think what I try to focus on now is not getting, too far deep into the valleys and let that one instant trump or overshadow all the positives that we have going on. So the job is challenging, but I think any job is challenging. And I think our job is equally rewarding for as challenging as it is. And we can go to a restaurant and we can see all the smiling faces and we can see all the repeat guests that we're so privileged to serve. And I think seeing that in real time helps to offset maybe some of the challenges that, running restaurants come with.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's great. Alan answered that by, my job is very challenging because I'm always trying to be on the top. So, that's great. That's great. Some of the things you say, my family's always had restaurants. My brother-in-law runs a restaurant now in a small town in Pennsylvania, and it's sort of like the community center of the town. And to me, it's kind of really cool. In fact, so much so that he put up pictures, black and white photographs from the old town, historical pictures, so people could come in and look at them. And as crazy as it sounds, it's the same people like night after night. They're in there regularly. Some people are in there every day. Some people are in there like once a week on the same night. They eat the same things. And it's just like, I don't know, it's a really unique thing. And boy, if you can get that and get that kind of patronage, it's just a wonderful thing. And they're all like friends, and it's just wild. You end up, like you said, you take care of these folks and you treat them right, and they have a great experience, and it just becomes a part of their life. It's pretty cool.
Totally. I mean, I think for us, we're trying to, again, as we write our story and history, we'll be able to look back and determine ultimately what type of restaurant we created. Mm-hmm. But I think, the goal is to kind of be the community neighborhood restaurant with some, chain systems that make the experience consistent from visit to visit. And I think if we can do that and go into these markets and be a place where the community can come after soccer games on the weekends and come after graduations and come for date night or come with the family. I mean, those are the types of memories that ultimately growing up, we always went to the local restaurant for different experiences each time. Mm-hmm. If Doc B's can become that consistently in each location that we have, I think that, that's ultimately what I think our mission is inevitably going to be.
That's awesome. So the last question in your question for him, and I'm going to answer it then, and I want to know your answer. If you could start all over, would you stay in the same business? And of course, Alan said, yes, I love it.
Yeah.
What's your answer, Craig?
Yeah. Well, I'll say it this way. I know nothing else, So my only answer is yes. You know, what I try not to do now is I don't try to get caught up so much in the everyday. Because I think if you get caught up in the everyday, you can become overwhelmed. I mean, the daily grind of business in general, and specifically the restaurant business, can definitely overwhelm somebody. And so what I try really now to do is be a couple of steps ahead and think about, you know, where we're trying to go with the business and the growth and the team. Be thankful for the past and all of those experiences that have got us to here. And so my answer is yes, I would do it all over again.
Awesome.
I just sometimes wish that, you know, the lessons that I'm now learning 10 years into it came a little earlier. And I'm sure in 10 more years, I'll wish what I know then I thought about now, and just to kind of get through some of the more challenging days.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. So what's next for Doc B's? Any new markets? Anything new and exciting coming up?
Yeah, the next restaurant is under construction in Cary, North Carolina, which is adjacent to Raleigh in the Durham area. Super excited about it. It's a new lifestyle center called Fenton. And I think, you know, it's going to thrive in that, again, neighborhood, community environment. And then from there, you know, sort of like slow and steady wins the race, you know, one, two restaurants a year, looking across the country where we think what we know has worked up until this point can hit the repeat button and work again. You know, it's amazing. The people and the team and the real estate is really the recipe for success. And if we can get those two things right over and over and over, I think we're going to have a really successful business on our hands.
That's awesome. No argument there.
Yeah.
All right. So your very last question, okay? And it can't be your restaurant, even though I know you love your food. If you had one final meal, what would you eat and why?
You know, I wish I could give you some like crazy over the top, like grand answer for that. But the truth is I would have two slices of New York pizza, and I'd have it served with a Coca-Cola, and I would go to any pizzeria in New York City. It doesn't need to be Joe's or John's or Ray's. Could be anywhere. I'd sit at the counter. I'd take some greasy Parmesan cheese and red chili flake. I'd pour it on my two slices of pizza, and I would be in heaven.
It's not a bad answer, man. I'll tell you, there's something about New York pizza that's tough to beat. And so listen,
now I live in Chicago, so I hope I don't get out.
Yeah, right. Man, they do that thick stuff, you know. I like a nice thin New York pizza, you know. So hey, Craig, you were awesome. I really appreciate this. It was a lot of fun. I mean, obviously I never got to meet your father, but I can tell you I know he'd be really proud of this, and it's a shame he didn't get to see what you've created. And even Alan, I mean, it would be Alan, I'm sure, would just be thrilled to death. So it's all great stuff. Thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you for having me, Michael. This was great.
All right, buddy. All right.